Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the NBPE Investor Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Peter Bunnlay. Thank you. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the NBPE Investor Call. This is Peter Bunnlay, and I'm here today with my partner, Paul Daggett, and the chairman of NBPE, William Maltby. The presentation we'll be using today is available on our website, www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. Before we begin, I would like to point everyone to page 2 of the presentation, which provides some important comments regarding forward-looking statements. Now I'd like to hand it over to William to say a few words to begin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this investor call. Our last investment call was about 3 months ago in late March, which was very early in the global lockdown scene. And we've now got much better, but certainly not complete visibility of the effect of the lockdown. And today, Peter Bunnlay and Paul Daggett from Neuberger Berman, our manager, will focus on providing an update on our capital position and liquidity, particularly relative to our commitments, and also give you an update on our portfolio. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. So I'm going to hand over to Paul Daggett to give you take you through the meat of the presentation now.
Great. Thank you, William. So I am on slide 4 of the presentation, which, as Peter said, is available on our website. So hopefully everybody has that in front of them. As a reminder, the numbers in this presentation are mostly as of the 31st of May. But what that means is the private valuations of companies is as of the end of the first quarter, so 31st of March. Public, as well as interest on credit positions and foreign exchange, has been rolled forward to May. So just to remember, the core of the numbers that we'll be talking about today are actually first quarter numbers, and obviously we just finished the second quarter, and we'll begin working on those numbers as soon as we begin to receive information. So on slide 4, the balance sheet in our standard format. Obviously, it's been a long 5 months, and we present here both December the 31st and the 31st of May. You can see that the notable changes really are in three places. I would say, first of all, I'll start with the credit facility. We, as you know, extended the credit facility with MassMutual at the beginning of May. So we have a $300 million facility, which as of the end of May, $125 million was drawn on that facility, giving us $175 million of additional available liquidity. The valuations, what we'll get into in some detail later on, but you can see the private equity fair value did decline. Part of that was valuation declines, which were about 8.8% on constant terms between investments adjusting for cash flows. We also did have a number of realizations in the first 5 months. So for that reason, the private equity fair value did decline. And what you can see is the private equity investment level moved from 121% at the end of December to where we are at the end of May, which is 132%. I would say our goal is to be more in line with where we were at December in the long run. Obviously, part of the increase in that level is simply the mathematics around the valuation decline, but it is something we are closely watching, and of course, we'll touch on in terms of how we are planning to use our capital resources on a go-forward basis. On slide 5 is a bridge that looks at where we started the year to where we are today. Really, just a couple of points. One, the private investment depreciation in the first quarter was $1.15 per share. Public, as of the end of the first quarter, thinking all the way back to March 31st, also declined in value fairly significantly by 55 cents per share. But as you can see towards the right-hand side of the page, a lot of that Publix decline has since reversed. And actually, we saw gains of 40 cents per share on those public positions in April and May, which takes us through to that May NAV of 1721, which reflects an 8.6% year-to-date negative total return NAV development, including the payment of that first dividend, which we paid in February. On page six is the standard slide that we show our performance by asset class. First of all, you can see over 1 year, we do remain positive on a gross level with a 0.8% return. But of course, that's not something we're happy with. And if you think back to December, that number on a one-year basis was 12.7%. So there has been a decline as valuations have fallen. Again, we'll talk about valuations, but I think it's important to note that it is, at this point, a valuation issue only that has led to the decline, primarily, as you can see, of the direct equity investments, which over 1 year have produced a 0.9% return. So, again, still positive, but well below what we saw at the end of December, which was a 13.6% return. Nevertheless, over 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, the direct equity performance still remains good, but obviously not what we hope to achieve over the longer run. The other thing just to note, simply because it does stand out on the page, is that there was a write-down in one fund. I will point out that funds are only 2% of the portfolio at this point. So although, again, it's unfortunate that we did see a write-down on one of those funds, the overall impact in dollar terms to the funds is still very small. On slide seven, liquidity, and we're looking back over a 10-year period here, and over the last 10 years, we've seen over $2 billion of realizations in our portfolios across asset class. So this includes legacy funds, which obviously have a larger influence at the beginning of this slide, income investments, which have a larger influence in the middle of this slide, and then to the right, we're seeing equity investments become the driving return feature of the fund, as well as what's returning most liquidity to the fund. At the bottom of the page, we also show the percentage of realizations in a given year as a percentage of the beginning of year fair value of the private equity portfolio. And you can see that there's been quite a wide range of values. I would say that 2015 and 2016 can be discounted slightly because there was a large amount of income realizations in those years. So I'd say the range to look at here over the last 10 years has been 16 to 36% of the portfolio realized in the given year. So far in 2020, we've seen about 6% liquidity in the fund, which only includes things that have actually closed and we've received the cash. If you include the one notable realization we also have in process, you can see we're up to about 97 million of realized or pending realizations in the year, which is 6 to 9% of the portfolio. So normally I would say the first half of the year was really in line with our expectations. Obviously the second half of the year, we don't know what we'll see in terms of realizations, but it is obviously an important feature that we have received. We've received 60 million and we expect to receive another 30 million plus when that investment closes. On slide eight, a little bit more on those liquidity events. LGC is the most notable of those, a full realization of a 2016 co-investment that was sold to financial buyers that returned $28 million almost to MBPE. A couple of other full or final realizations. Evoqua was a public stock position, which was the remaining position from that exit that has now been completely sold. And then Galco also returned $7 million from a final exit. And then there's been a number of dividends and partial realizations, as you can see that take us to the $64 million of proceeds received year to date. And then just a couple of other things. Vertiv, which was sold to a special purpose acquisition company, it returned about $2 million in cash, but there's another $9.5 million remaining in public stock in that special purpose acquisition company that is now publicly listed. And then a notable IPO in February, actually early March, of GFL, which is one of our largest public positions at this point, with almost $20 million of public value in that stock. So again, as well as the $64 million of cash returned to us, we also have an additional $30 million of public positions from those two events. Moving on to slide nine, this looks at our exits and uplift, and again, there's a slide that we have typically shown over time. You can see in the three exits we've had so far this year, including all of the cash flows over time from those investments, we've recovered about three times our investment in those three exits year to date. So good performance on those. But also, I think, more importantly, on the right, looking at valuations over time, this looks at the uplift from the time an exit occurs to where that where those companies were held 3 quarters, 2 quarters, and 1 quarter prior to those exits being completed. And this looks back to the beginning of 2017. And you can see that on average, there was a 37% uplift from 3 quarters, kind of the undisturbed price, 3 quarters prior to an exit to the exit actually occurring, which again just gives you a view to those exits, the valuation discount that we had held those companies at. Public positions are on slide 10. We include here both the March value and the May value, which again shows you the increase that we saw in those stocks. We also did sell Evoqua, as I mentioned, so that is not shown here. One other thing to note is that while we have 78.7 million of fair value in public positions as of the end of May, we also hold a significant public position in a company called Chewy, which is held through a private position in PetSmart. The total value of the private and the public in those two companies is an additional 19.3 million. And that will, again, show up in the conversation later because Chewy has performed very well this year because of the environment we're all living in. And I'll explain that more at a later date. But overall, the point of this slide is there is a significant public portfolio. Obviously, in most cases, as we previously said, we don't control when these positions are exited, but it is one step closer to liquidity, and there is always the possibility that these positions are sold down over the short to medium term, but it's very difficult for us to predict that. On slide 11, we move on to capital position and excess cash available. And this looks at, on the left, where we started cash at the end of May, which was just under $10 million. We then have $53.7 million of pending realizations. That includes a proportion of the LGC exit, which we received cash for in June, as well as the announced but still pending sale of the engineering position. But those two things together, as well as some smaller cash items, come to $53.7 million of expected realizations, presuming that investment in engineering does close, as well as $35.6 million in signed transactions. So these are two transactions that have been signed, as is often the case, sometime in advance of them actually closing, but we do expect them to close later in the year. We also have declared a dividend, which we will discuss later in the presentation. And taking all of that known transaction and cash activity into account, and then also looking at the remaining $175 million that's available on our credit facility, we have $189 million of available cash and credit facility. And against that, we have unfunded commitments on a pro forma basis. So we've adjusted for third-party funds past their investment periods and portions of other funds that NBP has commitments to, which we don't expect to be called. Those adjustments are, I think, about 30 million, 32 million. Takes the unfunded commitments on a pro forma basis to 124 million. That, by the way, is something we would expect to be called over a 2 to 3 year period. So this is not an imminent event. But in total, that gives us pro forma excess capital of $65.5 million and a pro forma commitment coverage ratio, meaning we can cover all of the commitments in those unfunded funds by 153%. So again, we feel the balance sheet is very strong and we feel good about the available cash and credit facility that we have remaining. That is the overview of the fund and the capital structure. We now move into a section that looks at the portfolio valuations and, of course, the impact of the COVID-19 crisis on the companies in the portfolio. And starting with page 13, again, this is a standard slide, and it really hasn't changed a great deal since December. The overall message is the fund is very well diversified by size of company, by industry, by vintage year, and then obviously to a lesser degree by geography, but we do still have a global focus, albeit weighted to North America. On 14, we look at some of the themes. And again, I think over the last 2 years or more, we've discussed a lot the positioning of the investments we've been making in the fund. And we have really been approaching the market as a late cycle market. And for that reason, a large number of the investments fall into one of four categories. And those categories are laid out on this page. To take the left and the right-hand side, technology and industrial technology, as well as healthcare, have been big themes of ours. They are typically sectors that are less directly driven by GDP growth, and particularly, obviously, technology very often does have secular growth drivers. It also has the benefit of long-term contracts and high switching costs in many cases, which lead to or can lead to stable cash flows, which are all aspects of investments in technology that we like. In the middle, a couple of different things. First of all, we have a large number of companies which we think should have low cyclicality across all different industry sectors, but we have had a bias towards companies that we think can perform well through a downturn, and some of those companies are mentioned in that industries with low cyclicality. On the right of that is investments where we're really investing behind a long-term secular growth trend. So in these cases, of course, they could have some level of cyclicality. There could be some impact from a normal downturn, and there can be some impact from COVID-19 on these investments. But in the long term, we still think these are trends that in the vast majority of cases still hold up as things that we think will continue over time and can continue to mean that these investments can drive returns for MBP over that longer term. Obviously, importantly, across all of these, one of the big considerations we've had is capital structure. And again, I'll talk more about that in a few slides. Across all of these things, whether even in the low cyclicality section, but particularly in the secular growth trend section, it is very important to make sure you have a capital structure that's appropriate, that through a downturn, if earnings do decline, that the capital structure is appropriate. And again, that is a key piece of our underwriting across all of the investments we've been making in recent years. On slide 15, we move on to some of the summary observations in the environment that we've all been living in as it pertains to MBP's portfolio. We mentioned diversification, and we mentioned the focus on healthcare tech, media, and telecom. Below that, I think, first of all, the third bullet down, it's important to note that, of course, we do expect the portfolio to see short-term headwinds. I'll talk about some of those in the coming slides. But overall, our message is that we do believe the portfolio in the longer term is well positioned through some of those secular growth trends, through some of the lower cyclicality investments. And below that, you can see, as we've been through and assessed the portfolio, in the investment team's opinion, it's less than 7% of the companies that we think have long-term business model issues that arise from the COVID-19 crisis. And not surprisingly, the vast majority of those investments in that less than 7% of the portfolio are in oil and gas, which is a very small part of the portfolio. It's 1.3% of our fair value. And also in really areas that depend on discretionary spending, some of the retail investments, and some of the other discretionary spending focused areas, we may see a shift in the business model such that their business model really doesn't return to our underlying thesis at the time we made the investment. So there is a small proponent of the component of the portfolio that falls into that, but as we say, it's just under 7% from having gone through that. Of course, some of those companies still can return value. It doesn't mean there is no hope for them, but it does mean there is a sort of medium to long-term impact on the overall investment case that we originally had for those investments. Then at the bottom of the page, we have some statistics. And first of all, I'll give you some context around those. What we've done is look through the portfolio and, in the way we usually do, supply the EV to EBITDA multiple that the portfolio is valued at, as well as giving leverage multiples. The numbers here are like for like, and so we've only included multiples of companies that we held at the end of December and at the end of March, so that we're looking at the same data set. And of course, it doesn't include, as we usually don't, public investments, debt investments, and investments that are valued on a revenue multiple or on some multiple of book value. So it makes up about 76 investments, which is 78% of the fair value of the portfolio. And the key message, I think, is that you can see there is a decline in the valuation multiple. And I think that has been very typical of what we've seen in the first quarter, that we've actually seen only a small number of companies in the portfolio through the first quarter see a decline in their earnings due to the crisis. And of course, that is because on a trailing 12-month basis, only a very small proportion of the LTM revenue and earnings actually fall into a period where COVID was, the COVID crisis was ongoing. So there's not been enough time within the portfolio to assess earnings and revenue. So really, what you see in the forthcoming valuation materials is a result of general partners taking a forward-looking approach and discounting the valuation that they were holding companies at to really try to get ahead of particular companies where some type of earnings impact was expected. So I think that's important to note, that, again, I think GPs have been very proactive in the majority of cases. And again, I'll point out a few investments as we move into the next few slides. So turning to page 16, we have a series of slides that look at the valuation changes of individual companies, and we've grouped them by overall percentage change, by industry, by vintage year, and by geography. There are actually a few reallocations we're going to make, having preparing for this call, gone through the data. There's a few things that we do need to adjust, so we will likely post a presentation with slightly updated numbers from this in the short term. But the overall message and the overall pattern, I think, of all of these slides remains. So first of all, in terms of overall valuation changes of the direct equity investments on page 16, you can see the over half, over 60% of the companies changed by between -5 to +5%. So the majority of the portfolio actually was quite stable. Not surprisingly, contained within there is more of the defensive, less cyclical type of investments we have within the portfolio. A good example of that would be the two telecom infrastructure investments that we have, which again, both saw stable earnings, and you would expect to continue to see stable earnings. They're basically telecom towers, and in one case, subsea cables. So typically do see very stable earnings. There's a company called GFL, which focuses on waste management, which falls into this bucket. So again, some of the larger positions and some of the more defensive positions fall into the core of the portfolio, which didn't see large moves in valuations in the first quarter. Then on the left-hand side of the slide, there are companies which fell anywhere from 5 to 10% to 20% or more. Obviously, within this part of the portfolio, we are seeing more cyclical exposure, but I'll also say there's some exposure within this side of the portfolio which is more secular in terms of our investment thesis, and has seen some short-term impact. So an example would be a medical device company which has a large reliance on elective surgery. Obviously, something like that would have seen an impact in the second quarter, and valuation adjustments, as I mentioned, are often have been made in expectation of that type of quarter. So that's one example. Another example would be a company that we have which really depends on capital expenditure. In the long term, we have a secular thesis around this company that we think will continue over the longer term, but in the shorter term, we may see a slowdown in spending. So again, a valuation decline would be expected in the short term to adjust for that. The second type of company here is really, there are certain companies that we would have said were non-cyclical based on prior recessions that have seen some particular impact because of the COVID-19 crisis and the specifics of that, with people staying at home and the change in behavior that caused. Again, those types of companies that fall within here, I think we expect to be able to weather the lockdown period. And of course, we have to see what the recovery looks like. But in the longer term, we generally believe they'll return to our previous investment case. And then the third type of company is cyclical companies, so companies that depend on consumer behavior. And of course, you would expect a decline in those types of companies, both in the public and the private market valuations. And we did see that, and that's what falls into the left-hand side. And then finally, on the right-hand side, companies that actually increased from 10% or greater. There's a small number of companies here, and again, they are really falling into two areas. One is technology, and the second is retail, but retail that has benefited from the stay-at-home behavior. So again, I mentioned earlier Chewy, which is owned by PetSmart. That company, which is an online provider of pet food and pet supplies, obviously has seen a benefit in terms of the stay-at-home, both in terms of its underlying earnings, but also its stock market performance. And so that is one of the companies that's increased in value over the year so far. On slide 17, we look at the change by industry. And again, I think the pattern probably won't be surprising to people. To cover the two sides, the left and the right-hand side of the chart first, and by the way, the slide is organized with the largest concentrations in the portfolio on the left, moving to the right where the smallest concentrations. So the good news is that the largest concentration in technology, media, and telecom has been the best performing, and that's for all the reasons I mentioned earlier around the typical resilience that you would see in a software business, and there are a number of companies that have done well in that area. The two telecom infrastructure businesses I mentioned also fall into this area, so again, have held up well. There were some declines, though, so there are a number of companies which, although they are technology businesses, do have end markets that have seen an impact, and so there are some declines, but overall they offset to mean this is the best performing industry in 2020 in NBPE's portfolio. The other industry sectors, consumer, transportation, industrials, business services, healthcare, and financial services, in general, saw some companies increase within the portfolio, but obviously the greater weight was on decreases within the portfolio. Once again, I will say that the vast majority of these cases, these are multiple of investment-related declines. That's not to say that obviously that couldn't continue or that we know that that will reverse over time. But to date, as you look at these declines, I would say they are driven by a change in the underlying multiple that they've been held at, as opposed to anything else as of the first quarter. And then finally, again, just because it does stand out on the right, energy did decline the most. It is only 1.3% of the portfolio. And of course, it's not surprising given what has happened in energy markets. So we don't obviously focus on energy investments. They are legacy, older investments, but we'd be remiss not to mention that. In terms of industry, again, 18, I won't spend a lot of time on. Really what this slide is intended to show is that there is a diversity of business models, even within individual industry subsectors. So, you know, we have, if you look at consumer, there is some consumer discretionary, but equally there's companies like Action, which has, I think, a company that a lot of people on this call probably know well, but has hit most of its stores again open and performing well. So is the kind of company we would hope to be resilient in a downturn. And then Chewy, that I mentioned within PetSmart. So again, across each of the sectors, I think it's important to understand that it's, if you look at consumer, it is not all consumer discretionary. There's quite a divergence of different types of business and good diversification within each of the underlying industry sectors. Slide 19 looks at geography. We included it because I think we wanted to really give as much data as we could in this call, but I will say that the data sets outside of the US are much smaller and tend to be driven by what the concentration happens to be in terms of industries by a particular geography. Most importantly, I would say Asia and rest of the world is really driven by investments in Latin America. There's a couple of investments that were written down, but it's a small sample set. Similarly, the difference between Europe and the US, I would say that across our portfolios, we actually did see a slightly larger decrease. And when I say across our portfolios, I mean within our private funds. We did see a slightly larger decrease typically in Europe, which may be driven as much by valuation policies being slightly different as anything. But overall, it is a smaller sample set, and I wouldn't read too much into the differences on this chart at this point in time. On slide 20, I think there's an interesting slide that looks at the valuation changes by vintage year. And again, what you can see here is a pattern that the 2014 and earlier vintages have seen a greater decline in their prices. And I think this comes down to two things. First of all, it does tend to be the case that investments that have been held longer, very often there is a reason for that, which is that you know, the companies were not at a stage where underlying GPs felt they were ready to sell, that there was still work to be done or still issues with the company. I think in some cases that is true within this portfolio. Of course, there's also cases where GPs choose to hold because they particularly like an asset. So that's not always true. But I think there is some of that within the portfolio. And then secondly, again, I mentioned really over the last few years, we have been very focused on a late stage environment. But of course, in 2012, 13 and 14, there was more exposure to retail. There was also more of the exposure, albeit very small, to oil and gas. So there's a slightly different sector breakdown within those earlier years than there is in the more recent years. And I think those two factors together really explain why the left-hand side of the page looks so different to the middle and the right-hand side of the page. Of course, the good news is, again, looking at the percentages at the bottom of the page, that the majority of the portfolio is in 2016, 17, 18, and to a lesser degree, 19 and 20. And the valuation changes, more importantly, the underlying portfolios have held up, I think, particularly well in those vintage years. So, again, I think that is a positive message to come out of this. And then the final slide on the portfolio is a slide which we've updated, but is a slide similar to that which we showed in March, which really looks at two things. First of all, the enterprise value of companies in the portfolio, and we are well diversified. There's 27% of the company in enterprise values of the portfolio, and enterprise value is less than $1 billion. The other 73% is in companies of one to greater than $3 billion in enterprise value. On the right, we look at covenants and leverage levels. And again, I think the good news is that general partners very, very early on in this crisis really focused on underlying company liquidity, on discretionary expenditures, and on the overall capital structures of their companies. And of course, this is also a part of our original investment cases that we felt capital structures were appropriate for investments we were making. And the outcome of that is where we sit today is that the vast majority of the companies are either covenant light or completely covenant free in their capital structure, or have very low leverage in the overall capital structure, which we've defined here as less than 3x net debt to EBITDA. So again, I think in terms of where companies are positioned over the longer term, the capital structure is always going to be one of the most important points. And in most cases, we feel very good about that in the underlying portfolio. And so with that, I will hand back to Peter to talk about the NAV and share price performance, as well as the discount and the dividend.
Thanks, Paul. Turning to page 23, you can see the NAV total return for NBPE on a 1, 3, 5, and 10-year basis in both dollars and sterling. These figures are net of all fees and expenses, as well as incorporating the company's capital structure. For reference, the table that Paul walked through back on page 6 provided asset-level returns on IRR basis over these same time periods. Page 24 shows our share price progression over the last 5 years. The shares were making good progress over this period until February of this year. As you all know, NBP's share price, together with the public markets more generally, fell significantly in March. We've made back some progress from this drop, but we still have a ways to go, frankly. The story is similar for NBPE's discount to NAV over time on page 25. The discount averaged about 22% in 2018 and 19. It reached a low of approximately 14% earlier this year. Our discount widened significantly when the share price dropped. It's begun to narrow again and currently stands at 33%. It's important for us to note we are not pleased with this discount level. We're working very hard to narrow the discount. Now I'd like to hand it over to William to briefly discuss the board's recent dividend announcement before coming back and giving you some more figures and details on that.
Yes, thank you. On page 26 of the dividend update, 2 days ago, we announced a dividend of 29 cents per share. On an annualized, then that is basically a flat dividend. On an annualized basis, this represents a 3.4% yield based on the 31st May NAV. And it also represents a yield of over 5% based on yesterday's closing share price. In coming to this decision, the directors recognized the importance of sustainable dividends to many shareholders. And that we also weighed up where MBPE's portfolio is, although it's still the crisis is still to play through, we believe the majority of the portfolio is well positioned for long-term growth, as you've heard from Paul, despite this current environment. And we also feel comfortable with this dividend payment on the basis we've had $64 million of realizations in the year to date. And to give a bit of context, this dividend represents $13.6 million of cash. We're comfortable with the positioning of the portfolio, and we're comfortable with the available capital resources of MBPE relative to its unfunded commitments, and also that no long-term refinancing requirements. We're conscious that leverage levels are higher than we would like, and I'll say a couple of words about that further. But before I leave dividends, obviously it's almost a statement of the obvious, any future dividend decisions were based on the company's position and economic conditions at the time the decision is made. I'll hand back to you, Peter.
Thanks, William. So turning to page 27, as Paul and William have outlined, NBPE currently has a solid capital position. Give a few figures on a per share basis. We received $3.82 per share in distributions from the portfolio in 2019. And in the first half of 2020, we have received $1.37 per share in distributions, and the pending realizations that Paul talked about would result in an additional 73 cents per share in realizations. This would bring our total distributions from our investments to $2.08 per share for 2020. Now, our semi-annual dividend is 29 cents or 58 cents per share on an annualized basis. So this would mean that our dividend is about 3.6 times covered by received and known 2020 realizations from our portfolio. Now, the dividend William just described is a continuation of NBPE's strong history of returning capital to shareholders. We can see that in more detail on page 28. Over the last 12 years, NBPE has returned almost $250 million to shareholders, $54 million through share repurchases and $195 million through dividend payments. One last item I did just want to touch on briefly, and that is ESG and sustainability. Now, these are topics of critical importance to thoughtful investing, and we believe that focus on these issues is going to become even more important as the world deals with both the COVID crisis and broader social issues. We're proud that we at Neuberger have been managing our private equity portfolios, including NBPE, on an ESG-aware basis since 2007, and we've been fully ESG integrated for more than the last 2 years. Now, we're currently undergoing a significant effort to increase the transparency of our portfolio regarding ESG factors and sustainability, and we're looking forward to sharing this with all of you in the near future. We're very proud of the portfolio that we've built, and we intend for NBPE to be a leader in ESG and sustainability among listed private equity vehicles. So with that, I think William would like to make a few concluding remarks before we open it up to all of you for questions.
Thank you, Peter. And I think just in terms of concluding, I think despite the relief, I think probably that everyone on this call is feeling that we're at the start of the end of the lockdown process, it is still a very uncertain time in terms of both economics and politics. And I just wanted to also say in my concluding remarks that the board has been very impressed how well MB, our manager, has responded to the challenge of operating and dealing with this period of great difficulty. And that is no great surprise to us, and it's also no great surprise that given the quality of the managers that MB select, that they have been impressed by, in turn, by the quality of the GP's actions in managing the underlying portfolio company. And I hope today we certainly endeavor to provide details and reassurance on the quality of the portfolio and the company's liquidity and capital position, particularly relative to its commitment. I mentioned on the in the context of the dividend that the board's focus now is on deleveraging. The investment level at about 130% is higher than we would like, and we would like to aim to get to 115 to 120% investment level over time. And we will only be funding new investments where they're either pre-agreed deals or honouring commitments that have already been made. And as Peter alluded to, whilst we're relieved that the share price is no longer plumbing the lows that we saw towards the end of March, we're not happy with where it is now. And, by way of reminder, in that January-February period before this crisis hit, the share price was at record highs. We've managed to move the discount through that stubborn 20% range barrier that has sort of bedeviled the company for years, and we got the discount heading into the low teens. And we are feeling that our big efforts, particularly in ramping up the investor relations and investor marketing side, were really paying off. And obviously, it's been quite difficult to really press hard forward on the investor marketing side and in getting new investors on board during the last few months. But we're very much looking forward, and we'll be focusing on getting that part of the plan together. And on that note, and on taking you to page 29, I'd just like to remind everyone that the fundamentals of MBPE's value proposition remain sound. It's a diversified private equity portfolio made by some of the world's best private equity GPs, and we feel it's well positioned over the long term despite the current environment. We feel the balance sheet is strong. We've got ample liquidity after the dividend. And finally, we operate on a very cost-effective basis in the private equity industry with no second layer of management fees or carried interest on the vast majority of our direct investments. And that comprises the vast majority of the portfolio.